and Local, Part 3.1, The Cook Inlet Dena'ina Manga Society. "What the hell happened to you yesterday, Sonny? You took off running," was Dale Johnson, Sunshine's best friend, whose luck would have it gave him the idea of hand-building an usik and after-school ceramics. "Went down like this last week."
"Dude, you are gonna have to stand out here. Impress a lady for once in your pathetic life. You're gonna have to make something that shows you're sensitive to the world around you, to who you are and where you come from, but that you're also a man."
"You mean like make a totem pole?" Sunshine was imagining his oldest brother Chainsaw sculpting those ugly totems with his shirt off and Taiga ripping him for it.
"No, you dork. A totem pole is too hard for you. You're a beginner. You need to start off easy. Make an osik. Simple shape you are very familiar with."
"You think I should make a walrus cock?"
"A penis bone, dude. Get it right. And don't be a pussy."
"Well, what are you gonna make?"
"A bong.
But I'm gonna sculpt it like a sexy anime zombie or something. Totally bitchin' like that. Look like the bowl coming out of his mouth or something."
"You know Mr. Collins knows what a bong is and what it looks like. He's not gonna let you fire it."
"Are you sure? I think he just acts like that to try and make kids like him or something. Mr. Collins doesn't care if we make bongs."
"Oh, Mr. Bongs and Captain Walrus Sticks together at last," Mr. Collins said as he recognized Dale come in to join his buddy in a wholesome and productive after-school activity.
"Any more fascinating expansions of the human creative endeavor today, boys? Are you going to break through that wall and delve us all into the incalculable void of new thought today, here, with all this undeveloped, unfired mud?"
Good afternoon, Mr. Collins. How are you today, sir?"
"I'm going to make a pot today, I believe." Dale, snickering, had an underdeveloped sense of humor that will honestly get better for him in college, after he takes a political science class seriously and has to go to the emergency room to get a tooth removed from his back. But right now, his sarcasm is not paced and a tad annoying, coming off more dickish than anything, which fits him just fine at 17. Dale was wearing brown extra-tough galoshes with the pale yellow border on top and bottom, with the added Dale Johnson, the number 2, written in black Sharpie at the top of each, which went unnoticed as he enjoyed the same pant stylings as Sunshine, large, puffy, black and red, many unnecessary buckles, clasps, and zippers, arranged in ornate, rigid patterns resembling ancient numerical systems. The pair Dale had on today also boasted a blue and gold stitched fire-breathing dragon on the left leg, spiraling around expressively onto the buttocks. It matched nicely with his tight black long-sleeve cotton shirt that went all the way to his fingers and had a V-neck cut in it, with patches of see-through black and a treasure trove of gold skulls screen-printed on it about its magnificence. The jewel of discontinuity in his ensemble was the tufts. Extra tufts are galoshes worn on fishing boats and in canneries or fish processing plants in the Aleutians, Kodiak, Kenai, in the southeast, but the style has found its way all over Alaska. There's no real reason to be wearing them outside of fishing-related enterprises, so it was more of an avid statement of consistent and perennial outdoorsmanship exhibited by several Alaskans, begging the question to all those around them, "Has that splendid iron dog been fishing this late in the season? Were they ice fishing moments ago this very day?" It is also one of the reasons Anchorage has developed a reputation as a poorly dressed city. No matter who you are or what outfit your outfit is for the day, in Alaska, adding a pair of extra tufts to it is completely acceptable. Kids, teachers, and administrators can be seen wearing these brown galoshes any time of year around Spinard High, around their places of worship or work, even in the shopping centers and museums. It's not uncommon for girls to go to prom in extra tufts, or for a teacher to wear them all day while teaching, or for a doctor to be wearing them while performing surgery, for that matter. They are as ubiquitous in Anchorage as those large green dumpsters we all love.
"Well, Mr. Dale Bongfather Johnson, you have quite an exceptional mind, and I believe I speak for the entire school when I say that we look forward to seeing your pot. The throwing wheels are on the other side of the room," Mr. Collins said, pointing towards the back of the classroom.
"Thank you, sir," Dale frowned politely, waiting for Collins to move along in his socks and sandals, before continuing with Sunshine. So continuing, where we left off.
"It was those Turnigan turds, Dylan chasing them. They wanted to kick my ass."
"What'd you do?" Dale asked sincerely.
"I don't know. Couldn't even figure it out. I think they were just being a bunch of dicks. Sunshine really wanted to talk about Brick."
"Well, it had to have been something. We need to get to the bottom of this, Inspector Mosquito," Dale was teasing. After a few moments, Sunshine asked him, Do you think someone can make themselves disappear? Are you trying to cry for help, Sonny? Dale jokingly, still. I'm serious. Like in that manga we saw the other day. The ones those college kids who were in the library doing that thing the other week. The club? The Cook Inlet Denina Manga Society? Dale remembered well because he remembered seeing nudity in the drawings, of which he approved greatly, especially the butts. But Sunshine was confusing him. Look, man, I told you. I thought it was cool, you know. I like manga, and I really thought it was cool that they talk about it in school, like it wasn't totally lame or not as good as whatever our grandparents did, even when we read in school. But remember the one with the guy who could will things, or the one with that guy that could teleport and stuff? Do you think there are people who can do that? Yeah, the superhero one, I remember it. Dale was doing it. He was remembering. And then, what was that guy's name? The Cook Inlet Denina Manga Society was brought to Spinard High as an extension of the Educational Outreach and Cultural Preservation Department of the Consortium Initiative, where Sunshine's parents both work. Several years ago, Haida Manga Comics became quite popular with kids all over Cook Inlet, but especially with kids in the Anchorage Bowl. The Haida Manga was originally published out of Haida Gwaii, Canada, as part of a program to get people speaking Haida again. At one point, there were only 38 fluent speakers left in the world. The Mosquitoes speak simple words and phrases, which were handed down to their father from his mother, Primrose, who grew up speaking Haida with everyone in her family. Reggie Sr. was sent off to a missionary school as a boy after he lost his family in an accident. He bounced around in missionaries and orphanages until he took a job fishing out of Ketchikan at 16, where he met his future wife. He had to relearn simple Haida from Primrose after they got married. He never became fluent, but he understands his wife when she speaks to him, and he takes great comfort in it. In fact, on his deathbed, he will ask her to speak to him in Haida, and ask her to tell him a story about their life together. All the best parts. Start with you and our family. Make sure you talk about the cheese, too. Talk about everything I'm going to miss. Cook the Mosquito had started taking a correspondence class out of Juneau to learn Haida from an elder. And as he talked his father into doing the same thing next semester, they both called the matriarch of the Mosquito clan Primrose Mosquito to her and talked to her in Haida over the phone, for which she was always happy and eager to support. The Denina Manga Society grew a few years back by some educators in the bowl who were looking at how well the Haida manga did in awakening the interest of kids in the stories and first languages being used. The Raven stories always did well because kids love trickster characters. They're extremely adroit at pulling pranks on others. Plus, ravens are natural magicians, and everyone likes that. The Denina were the original inhabitants of the watershed, and the contemporary use of the Denina language was currently in need of the same kind of linguistic reboot that the Haida were employing. So the Cook Inlet Denina Manga Society was born, and initiated by a few comic book enthusiasts, Denina speakers, and anthropologists. The idea was to try to get kids looking at storytelling and drawing by fusing traditional Denina with Japanese manga style. They were also going to publish a few stories themselves in this manner, retelling a few of the old Denina stories, maybe get some local storytellers to commit something to the written form and then illustrate it in the fused style. The initiative also opened the opportunity for kids to interact creatively with Denina culture, maybe tell a story about the endangered Cook Inlet beluga whale pod or a morality tale about earthquake preparedness. The comic books the Denina manga group published looked very home-published, almost photocopied, as if they were done in a 24-hour copy and scan joint, not sent off to China and back again through an actual book publisher. But they were fun to read, and the stories were quite entertaining. Spinard High hosted the Denina Manga Month at the library, with different authors or speakers coming in and doing a presentation. Sunshine and Dale went 2 times last week, once during their Alaskan Studies class, and once during their writing composition class. The speaker for their Alaskan Studies class was a nice older woman who was one of the last speakers of the 4 Denina dialects, and when she was talking about some stories her granny used to tell her as a kid, which she retold and had illustrated by a young woman from the university. They were fun stories, mostly about gathering berries and things of that nature, which gave the names of everything in Denina and in English so kids can learn. The presentation the boys really got into, though, was the one given during the writing composition class. It was a young couple, a man and a woman, 22-ish, completely punk rock and awesome. They were retelling scary stories, ghost stories, hairy man, boogeyman, whatever. They had wild hair and nose rings with lots and lots of tattoos, done the old Anungan way, green and black patterns on the necks and faces, all done by hand. The couple also boasted the best-drawn comics out of all the ones in the collection, plus they were the ones who designed the Dumpster Ravens logo, of which both Sunshine and Dale love. They said they were going to be publishing a full-length Denina manga comic for the next Dumpster Ravens album, set to come out next week, but they didn't want to talk much about Alaskan death metal. Surprisingly, they wanted to talk about writing and translating, and they wanted to discuss the traditional ghost-telling techniques from Alaska, and how to tell scary stories by using the right kind of language and in what order. Sunshine and Dale agreed afterwards that that presentation was easily the best class they had ever sat through. "I could listen to that beautiful man speak all day," Dale was getting dreamy-eyed and breaking his sardonic character a bit, as he had been doing around Sunshine more and more lately. "Wasn't he amazing?" "Yeah, they were cool. I'm pretty sure dude is straight, though, that they are a couple and just like working together, you know? Seems like a real tight bond, having a spouse and a teammate." Sunshine was teasing. "Whatever, Sapien. Don't ruin this for me. I'm a devoted fan of Denina manga. I'm simply expressing my love of their craft. Simple, pure manga." The Denina manga story that Sunshine was mentioning to Dale at this moment, trying to open up the subject for more conversation and a little light therapy for having had watches as a crazy, naked homeless man disappeared. This particular manga was a traditional, regular-ass superhero story about an ordinary person who got superpowers, and with the one twist being that the human stole the superpower from a sleeping deity, a beautiful water spirit, which is quite Raven-esque by nature. The story was about a white guy who goes camping and sees a river spirit sleeping, so he goes and takes the river spirit's superpowers, which he keeps in a cache nearby. The white guy steals them, magically turns into a teleporter, and he can go anywhere by willing it. When the river spirit wakes up, she is angry and has a hard time catching the human because the human can teleport at will. The man becomes a superhero. He has adventures. He fights some evil spirits and even prevents some crimes. Eventually, the superhero realizes he doesn't want the powers because they bring him more troubles than they are worth. And he gives them back to the river spirit, who catches him putting them back in the cache and trying to sneak away. She punishes the human by cursing him, that he can never get restful sleep inside of a human house again. He will always have to take his nightly shelter with the animals and the spirits, so that he will never disrespect the earth again. The story ends with him sleeping under a tree with a moose, then sleeping in a den with a fox, then sleeping in a big nest high in a tree with an eagle, then sleeping in a hollow tree with a hibernating black bear, then sleeping in a snow cave with a polar bear, then frozen over next to a wood frog in a winterized metabolic stasis, all the while having to keep his personal effects in a cache nearby. It was quite an artistic montage at the end of the story. That is the part Sunshine remembered the most. "The superhero's name in the manga isn't important. It's the story. He could teleport. I think I saw a guy do it yesterday, Dale, when those Tarnigan fuck nuggets were chasing me," he said, now that he had to wait for confirmation of crazy or certified ape shit. "Teleport? You saw a dude teleport?" Dale was trying to come up with a joke, but started to let it go, kind of... "Yesterday? Dylan or Chase? Seriously shit, dude. Down off fireweed, in the big field, near some trees. It's actually this crazy old man, used to be related to my mom. He knew my name, and then he teleported away." "What? Come on, sonny. I'm your friend and all, but really..." Losing patience. "Did Dylan or Chase and that other guy they like, did they see it?" "That's it, that's it. Yes, they did. But they didn't show up today. We need to talk with them." Sunshine was finally feeling a little relief at the thought of being able to share this with someone else. Dale was great and all, but... "Ew, you mean to go hang with those troglodytes? Sunshine, my friend, just... ew." Neither boy cared much for the group of slednecks that would randomly drive around the neighborhood, pulling out in front of cars just so they could scream, "Hey, fuck you!" while flipping the bird to total strangers in parking lots. The kind of kids that make many people keep baseball bats in their cars. "It's important, Dale. We seriously have to get them to talk about it. I'm kind of super freaking out here, dude." Sunshine was making his case. Dale, looking at the pounds of unworked clay, of which he had no intention of intervening with, nor did he intend to peer into the great creative void or whatever it may be. He did, however, intend to maintain the well-being of his friend, even if it meant that he would get the old, "What's attracted to ferrous metal, Fagnet?" Chestnut, from Anchorage's most reliable brain trust. "Very well, Inspector Mosquito. To the Mosquito Mobile."